Hello, I'm Nick Watt and welcome to Politics Weekly. This week's edition comes to you from Brussels, where Gordon Brown has taken his roadshow to save the world. We'll be asking whether leaders around the world really are copying the Prime Minister's £500 billion rescue plan for banks. We'll also be examining what impact the economic crisis is having on the US presidential election after the third and final debate between Barack Obama and John McCain. Finally, we'll be asking what's left of the government's counter-terrorism bill after ministers drop plans to detain suspects without charge for up to 42 days. Joining me to discuss these matters is Jackie Davis, the Director of Communications for the European Policy Centre here in Brussels. Hello, Jackie.
Hello.
We have Ian Traynor, the Guardian's Europe editor, who's been stalking the Prime Minister in Paris and Brussels this week. Hello, Ian.
Hi there.
And finally, we are joined from Guardian HQ in London by Aditya Chakraborty, the Guardian leader writer. Aditya is something of an economics brain box, so he can translate all those confusing terms for us. Hello, Aditya.
Hi, Nick.
Welcome to you all. Before letting the panel loose, we're going to hear from Simon Hoggart, the Guardian's parliamentary sketchwriter. Simon describes the scenes at Prime Minister's Questions this week, minus the boss, who's over here in Brussels with us.
Simon Hoggart, a parliamentary sketchwriter for The Guardian, reporting from the House of Commons, and we've just seen a very strange Prime Minister's question time. For one thing, it didn't feature the Prime Minister. He's gone over to Brussels to meet other EU heads, and his place was taken by his deputy, leader of the Labour Party, Harriet Harman, and facing her was William Hague. The tradition is that you don't face a deputy leader with a leader. You have to have someone understrapper to do the job. I don't think Harriet did all that well. I don't think she was particularly brief. Virtually all the questions were about the financial crisis we're facing, the banking crisis, unemployment, what seems to be a kind of perfect storm in the economy. William Hague had to be a little bit circumspect. Normally he would love nothing better than to absolutely tear into the government, but of course the Conservatives have pledged to stand shoulder to shoulder with the government and support them. But even so, party political feelings are running rather high.
The government are no longer in a position to boast about the economic record. When taxes have risen by more than £5,000 for every family in the country since 1997, when the World Economic Forum says 104 other countries are better prepared for the economic downturn, when debt has risen remorselessly, unemployment is rising at the fastest rate for 17 years, inflation has trebled compared to 1997. Against that background, isn't it time to acknowledge that the claim to have abolished boom and bust was one of the most foolish, one of the most hubristic, one of the most irresponsible claims ever made by a British Prime Minister?
Harriet Harman had no real reply to that, except that she thought it was a serious moment for the economy and it does require serious action. Right, and she also said it was quite wrong for the Tories to compare us unfavourably with other countries. I've noticed this, that very often when opposition say that the government is handling things very badly and has got us into a terrible mess, the government always replies by saying, oh, you're just talking Britain down. No, better to talk Britain down, I suspect, than to drag it down, as of course the Tories argue is going on. We finished with Adam Price demanding an apology. He said that we'd had no apology for the Iraq war. What he wanted, and indeed he demanded, an apology for the crisis we're in now, brought about by Gordon Brown.
Well, I'm going to turn to Aditya first because he's back in Blighty. So, Aditya, Simon was highlighting some interesting politics there. The Tories are offering bipartisan support for the government's rescue plan in one breath, and in another, they're saying it's you lot who got us into this mess. Tell us what's going on between the parties.
Well, the Tories are in a bit of a bind, really. They haven't really got solutions worked out to what they would do if they were at the helm during this banking crisis. At the same time, they want to stick it to the government for it all being their fault. You have to have a certain amount of pity for David Cameron and George Osborne and William Hague, although pity is not normally the emotion I would have for them, because they are faced with a position where the guy that they've been attacking, the guy who went from Stalin to Mr. Bean, famously, is now being lauded as a superhero. Very unlikely for a superhero to be Scottish and in his 50s and walk around in a suit. But What you could say, using a financial metaphor, is that shares in Gordon Brown were sold pretty low a couple of months ago, and they seem to be rising again. The big question is, will they keep on rising? I'd say there's sort of two big worries that I would have over sort of whether Gordon Brown can keep on this bounce. One is just a technical thing. It is true that leaders in Europe and in America seem to be copying elements of his plan, and it really does say something when a prime minister displays more technical prowess than a former Wall Street banker, like Hank Paulson. You are seeing, especially in Britain at the moment, some kind of squabbling between banks and Treasury about whether they really want to go through with all the nuts and bolts, I's and T's of the Treasury Rescue Plan. And there is some rising probability that the banks may try and back out of elements of the plan, at least. I think there's also a sort of longer term question for Gordon Brown. What makes a prime minister great rather than a civil servant great is not just having technical prowess, but aligning it to some kind of vision of what you want to do, having mastered all the fine details. So if the Brown plan comes off, if the banks are restored to some measure of health, what does he want to do with them? Does he want simply just to fix finance and everything to go back to where it was in 2006? Or does he want to reform finance? I think what you've seen, certainly within the Labour Party, people on the sort of left of the Labour Party have becoming increasingly bold in calling for Gordon Brown to try and reform finance and try and reform the entire economic model that New Labour presided over for the past decade.
Thanks very much for that. Now, Ian Traynor, you've been following Gordon Brown this week, and you've also, during your time in Brussels, seen him at various press conferences. How did you find Gordon Brown yesterday compared with Gordon Brown to a year ago?
Oh, quite simply, absolutely transformed. I mean, the change in the Prime Minister's body language was quite extraordinary. I think Brown in Europe has not been a happy story since he took over the Prime Ministership last year. I think this summit in Brussels might be his eighth overall. The previous six, at least, were basically battling Europe, defending Britain's red lines. The entire metaphor of his policy was, you know, Europe bad, Britain good, and we're fighting a war with them. Now, this time, of course, he's the European leader, bar none, on the big question of the international global financial crisis. Everybody's looking to his lead. He is the only one that seems to know what he's talking about, at least convincingly, knows what he's talking about. He's the only one kind of ahead of the curve. And indeed, last Sunday in Paris, you had another 15 leaders, including Sarkozy, Merkel, Berlusconi, etc., all taking their lead from British Prime Minister. I mean, the shift in political fortunes is extraordinary. I'm sceptical as to how long this bounce, the Brown bounce, is going to last. But for the moment, he's without peer.
So, Jackie, Gordon Brown, all the European leaders are watching him, copying him very carefully. You've watched him going from Stalin to Mr. Bean. A ditch is now saying he's superhero status. You've watched him over the years. What are you seeing?
I think actually in Brussels terms, he was never seen as Mr. Bean. He was more Mr. Grumpy. He very clearly wasn't happy to be here. He felt uncomfortable. He would arrive late. He would leave early. All his years as Chancellor, he had that reputation of saying his piece and going, i.e. had nothing to hear from the others. Now I think he is very much Mr. Happy or even Mr. Cuddly, because they're pouring praise on him. They're looking to him for relief. I think it is interesting. I don't know whether we're seeing a shift in his opinion on Europe, but what I do think we're seeing is one example where he does believe, genuinely, that we need a coordinated European response. He's been talking about we need a global response to a global problem. He is recognising that if we're going to get a global response, then Europe needs to lead that, and the more countries club together and punch their weight as the biggest single market in the world, then the more he can get it. So he is seeing a role for Europe, which is unique, and everyone loves to be praised, everyone loves to be told they found the solution. Whether the solution works, the markets are still very wobbly, so it could change, but right now he's the lifeline that everyone's clinging to.
Aditya, can I just ask you, how do you think this all plays back home? That the one thing that the Tories were able to play quite successfully until this crisis was that Gordon Brown, because he was Chancellor, had got us into this mess. Now that it's global, the line that Gordon Brown's been trying to get up, which is a global problem, not my fault, Gov, much more difficult for the Tories. How's that playing out?
Well, rewind to the end of last year, to autumn 2007. When did Brown really start to slide in public opinion? Was it with Northern Rock? Was it with the sort of first warning signs of a sort of encroaching credit crunch? I don't think so. I think it was when discs went missing, when there were questions raised about his competence. Now, at the moment, he looks very competent. The question is, will he continue looking competent as what is at the moment still primarily a financial crisis turns into a wider economic crisis? In Britain, we saw yesterday that unemployment had hit the highest level since the last recession. It now stands at 1.8 million people who are out of work. All the signs are that it's going to be hitting something like 3 million by the end of 2010, which is a totemic figure. And will also be something that hangs over any politician who waits until spring of 2010 to hold a fight election. What Brown's done very well so far is show that he's got a plan to tackle a banking crisis. What I wonder is how much of his power is he keeping dry to tackle an economic crisis? Just think back a month ago, he began what was a much vaunted economic relaunch by tackling the problems of the housing market and the energy prices. The problem with those two packages is they didn't really amount to much. He's going to have to do a lot better than that when he comes to tackling issues that people actually understand and that are actually stinging real people on real high streets.
They didn't amount to much, but now Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, has said and wrote a piece in the New York Times, which The Guardian ran this week, "Has Gordon Brown, the British Prime Minister, saved the financial world?" Did you fall off your stool when you read that, Aditya?
Paul Krugman and Gordon Brown and Bill Clinton and all of that lot, really, they were all part of this 90s generation of left of centre politicians who agreed on what they thought that should be done about markets, and that really the goal for the left of centre was to ameliorate the pain caused by markets and to try and use markets to some kind of social good. And when Jackie and Ian say that Brown was never much of a European, well, no, that's because his attentions were always turned across the Atlantic. And that's where that link between Paul Krugman and Gordon Brown come in. They would have run into each other numerous times in all those various huddles that the Democrats...
The Long Island, Cape Cod love-ins. I must bring in Jackie at this point.
Just wanted to say, I think there is another inherent danger for Gordon Brown. He has had praise heaped upon him, but he has to be careful not to go too far. Already last night, when he was circulating his paper about what we now need to reform the global financial infrastructure, the architecture, new supervision, so on. People were saying, hang on a minute, this is Sarkozy, Nicolas Sarkozy, the French president's summit. He's in charge. He's going to want to take the glory. I think it's a very careful balancing act in Europe. And if you push it too far and look like you're lecturing everyone all the time and trying to claim the credit for everything that happens, then it can backfire, particularly as he didn't have a lot of credit in the European Bank before this crisis. So he's got to be careful not to overplay his hand.
Thanks for that. Well, the economic crisis may produce its most dramatic result in just under 3 weeks' time. Opinion polls are now giving Barack Obama a decisive lead in the US presidential election after what is widely seen as his deft response to the financial crisis. This contrasts with the erratic behaviour of his Republican rival John McCain. Well, the two men met for their third and final presidential debate on Wednesday night in Long Island. Richard Adams gives us his take on the debate and the race.
Good evening and welcome to the third and last presidential debate of 2008.
The pressure was very much on both candidates because there's only 3 weeks left before the actual election. But the pressure was particularly on John McCain because he is at this moment behind in all of the opinion polls. So he needed to have a strong performance and he needed to give a different view of himself to undecided voters out there.
Another very bad day on Wall Street, as both of you know. Both of you proposed new plans this week to address the economic crisis. Senator McCain, you proposed...
The topic of the debate was mainly domestic policy. And of course, the domestic policy that's most on everyone's mind at the moment is the economy. There was another terrible day for the stock market today, and that follows a week last week of terrible economic news. Both candidates were very careful to talk about their economic policies, especially about increased spending and then tax cuts.
I am convinced that until we reverse this continued decline in home ownership and put a floor under it
and so that people have not only...
Number one, let's focus on jobs. I want to end the tax breaks for companies that are shipping jobs.
But it was illustrated most of all by a character called Joe the Plumber.
I would like to mention that a couple of days ago, Senator Obama was out in Ohio and he had an encounter with a guy who's a plumber. His name is Joe Wurzelberger.
Now, on Monday, Barack Obama met a plumber named Joe who just bought a small business, and Joe asked him about his tax cuts, Obama's tax cut policies, and Obama said that part of the idea was to spread the wealth. Now, John McCain picked him up on this and asked him what he meant.
Joe, I want to tell you, I'll not only help that you buy that business that you worked your whole life for and be able, and I'll keep your taxes low.
And in fact, kept going back to Joe the Plumber. And McCain, in fact, mentioned him 15 times in the course of the debate, which makes him currently the most popular plumber in the whole of America.
Now, my old buddy Joe the Plumber's out there. What you want to do to Joe the Plumber? I don't think that Joe right now... Hey, Joe, you're rich. Congratulations.
One of the issues that's been haunting John McCain throughout this entire election campaign is the Republican Party, and particularly the Republican administration of George Bush. George Bush's popularity in the opinion polls is now lower than Richard Nixon's during Watergate. And as a result, John McCain finds he has an albatross around his neck. In this debate tonight, he gave the clearest effort yet that he wanted to distance himself from George Bush.
Senator Obama, I am not President Bush. If you wanted to run against President Bush, you should have run 4 years ago.
Now, of course, John McCain himself didn't run against George Bush in 2004. In fact, John McCain endorsed George Bush in 2004. This makes it very difficult for him to escape the embrace of George Bush and the Republican Party and the Republican brand name.
This concludes the final debate.
So who won the debate? I have to say this was John McCain's best performance, but that's not really saying much. Obama was calm and composed, as he always has been. McCain was a bit more fiery. He managed to get a few more of his talking points in, his shots about Bill Ayers and about taxes. So he's more effective in that respect, but he doesn't really do this very well on television, and it comes across. It's hard to say that he got a victory out of it. Certainly he didn't get the victory he needed.
That was Richard Adams. Now, John McCain's old buddy Joe the Plumber has reduced Jackie to fits of laughter. Jackie, what have you got against plumbers?
No, I was just very struck by the fact that politicians always seem to like using the plumber. We've had in Europe a similar thing. Perhaps we'll call him Piotr the Plumber, the Polish plumber. There was all this debate a couple of years ago about whether we should open up Europe so that plumbers, hairdressers, all these people who provide services, could move around Europe. And this centred on the Polish plumber. Posters of a very hunky, gorgeous,
very good-looking
blonde, very, very handsome.
Yeah.
And this caused a huge row. It was all about stealing plumbers' jobs. So I was just very struck. Why is it always plumbers? Big question there. It's also very interesting, of course, in British politics, encounters with one voter often do change political fortunes. We saw Tony Blair being harangued by one voter at a hospital. Can actually change the whole tone of a debate and move it in a different direction. But I'm not sure. 15 times, 15 references to Joe. I think McCain probably over-egged the pudding on that one.
Aditya, tell me, do you think that Joe the Plumber is going to change the presidential election, or are we essentially looking at Barack Obama gliding to the White House because he seems to be handling this economic crisis so well?
Well, the polls will indicate that Obama's well in front, and I saw a bit of last night's performance. I have to say, I think Obama just creamed McCain. I tell you what I find fascinating from the point of view of someone based in London is how little play the US presidential elections are getting over here at the moment. I mean, we're only just 3 weeks away, aren't we, from the Americans choosing who's going to be the leader of the free world. And very few people here are talking at any length about Obama versus McCain, anything like that. What seems to be focusing the sort of the focus of attention over here is financial crisis. If I when I come into my office and head over to Nerd's Corner, usually my colleagues would be
that's
all
where the clever leader writers work, who are the cleverest people in the building.
Usually my colleagues would be talking at this stage, I would expect them, about presidential politics, but they're not. They're talking about the banking crisis. In fact, they now talk about this thing called LIBOR. I mean, these are people who would normally have thought that LIBOR was something kept in the dangerous animals enclosure at London Zoo.
And even I know what LIBOR stands for. I'm going to impress you now, Aditya. Am I right in thinking it is the London Interbank Offered Rate, as opposed to LIBID, which is the London Interbank Bid Rate? How's that?
Truly, Nick, you are a polyglot of our times.
Ooh.
Russell Chapeau.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
But really, this presidential election, it's kind of like a a mildly diverting edition of Thought for the Day in the middle of a news-packed Today programme. It really has not made much impact upon British public
debate. Interesting you should say that, because one place where it has made an impact, Ian Traynor, is your old patch of Berlin. That's where Barack Obama made that popped star speech. Well, that's certainly how John McCain described it, in front of 200,000 people. Tell me, what do Europeans think about him?
Clearly they are very impressed by him, but it's just events. I mean, are just getting in the way, obviously, in better circumstances and a less news-packed agenda, and people concerned about the money in their banks and panicking and mortgage prices and so on and so forth. I mean, it's fairly predictable that they're going to, you know, turn a blind eye or at least pay less attention to what's happening across the Atlantic. But I mean, obviously, there's a huge amount resting on this election for not only, I mean, given that the Americans are the paramount global power. I mean, an American election matters to everybody, and I think everybody realises that. Everybody knows that. So when Obama goes to Berlin, he's a rock star. It's like JFK in 1963 or something. I mean, it's just like phenomenal, the interest in him. John McCain, by contrast, or George Bush, or whatever, unless perhaps in parts of Eastern Europe, where they still revere anybody who happens to be an American president, you know, would never get that kind of turnout. We have to wait and see what is going to happen. There's an awful lot of confidence, or at least good faith and hope vested in this election. Just basically getting rid of Bush, I think, is the main point for most Europeans, because he's been a disaster for American policy, for foreign policy. He's been very, very bad relations with the Europeans. McCain will still be pretty problematic, and it's simply because of that that people are looking to a new era, a new start, a new sort of transatlantic this and that. But there will be still lots of problems, even with an Obama administration, on lots of the key foreign policy things. So let's not fool ourselves about that. Everywhere you look, from Iran to Iraq to Afghanistan to NATO to Russia, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that's that will be in Obama's in tray if he wins. And the Europeans won't be getting an easy ride.
So, Jackie, Ian's saying that there will be problems even if Barack Obama becomes president. I thought there was going to be a Europe United States love-in.
we're fond of love-ins at the moment, aren't we? Gordon Brown's love-in and now this one. I think there will be. I think there is a sense of excitement here about this election. I think there is a sense that America could change in a very fundamental way with a change to Barack Obama. It's a different mood. It's a different sentiment and a more outward-looking America. But there would be problems. And the biggest problem, and everyone here knows it, is that actually one bit of the EU-US relationship that's been going quite well is trade. They haven't been having the spats, the arguments that they used to have on a very regular basis back in the 90s. It's a reasonably solid relationship. The Democrats, of course, likely to be more protectionist, playing to their home base. So people saying, we welcome the change. We really want to see a change in the White House. But knowing that there'll be a lot of expectations among the public that this is a new America with a new outward-looking, open approach to life, and people in Brussels knowing it won't be quite like that. So it's excitement mixed with a certain sense of nervousness.
Jackie's absolutely right to pick on trade, because Obama's position on trade is quite unusual given where Al Gore and Bill Clinton stood on trade. They were pretty ardent free traders. They believed that trade would actually help parts of the developing world. And what you see from Obama is a rhetoric that's much more worried about what the ordinary working man gets out of free trade. If you look across the sort of G7 leaders at the moment, the most ardent free trader, the most ardent believer in open markets is probably Gordon Brown.
Ah, and Gordon Brown is, according to Paul Krugman, saving the world. Well, look, thank you for that. We're now going to turn our attention closer to home after the government abandoned its parliamentary battle to allow police to detain terror suspects for up to 42 days without charge. The government announced the climb down after it was heavily defeated in the House of Lords on Monday, though ministers tried to save face by publishing a bill containing the measure. This will sit on a Home Office shelf and will be introduced in Parliament if there is a major terror incident. Well, I caught up with David Davis, who resigned as Shadow Home Secretary in June to trigger a by-election in disgust at the government's tactics in forcing the measure through the Commons. I began by asking David how he felt on Monday as he watched the House of Lords as they voted down 42 days.
Vindicated, in a word. It's actually a faster outcome than I had expected. I'd expected the Lords to vote it down. I'd expected people like Faulkner and the ex-head of MI5, Eliza Manningham Buller to come out against. I had not quite expected the spectacular size of the majority. I think it's the biggest defeat of a government in my political lifetime.
But do you think that your resignation sort of emboldened the chaps in Ermine and chapesses in Ermine, or would they have done it anywhere in the House of Lords?
Oh, some of them. I think it would have still been won in the Lords. I suspect not by such a big majority, and I suspect also the public wouldn't have been so aware of it. I mean, since the by-election, if you look at the daily newspapers, twice a week on average, between one and three times a week, throughout the entire period since then, there have been on the front page of newspapers, not on page 15, the front page of newspapers, issues like lost computers and lost data even yesterday, issues like 42 days, issues like other invasions of privacy, local councils using children to invade our privacy or selling our data. All those sorts of issues are now front page issues. They've been, the news desk, if you like, have been sensitised to the issue, and the public have been sensitised to it. So this is very much at the forefront of people's consciousness, even in these weeks when actually jobs, banks, survival of the economy is actually the big issue.
Okay, well, thanks for that. That was David Davis joining us from a noisy Guardian room in the House of Commons. Aditya, let me just ask you, how bad is this climb down for the government? Though, of course, they would say it's not a climb down.
Well, it's obviously a good time to bury bad policies. It's not only 42 days that got shelved. It was also this week, Ed Balls decided that he was going to shelve the idea of having sats at the age of 14. I don't know if it's that bad for the government. Those sorts of policies were pretty unpopular, especially with papers like ours. And I would tend to applaud them for having at last clocked onto the idea that they were pretty bad ideas and dumping them. I mean, what next? Perhaps they might even shelve the idea of having national ID cards.
Do you think that this week we sort of have obviously had Hero Gordon, Paul Krugman praising him in the New York Times, but that the 42-day thing showed the sort of the old Gordon, the Gordon of last year when he couldn't connect? And it was interesting when they announced that they weren't going to overturn the House of Lords vote, and Jackie Smith, the Home Secretary, made that announcement in the House of Commons saying, well, we will introduce a 42-day bill if there is a terrorist emergency. She then tried to turn it on the Tories for being soft, and that didn't really work. That's old Gordon, isn't it?
Well, it is. I think you're right. Actually, on that evening, I went on the Nick Watt pilgrimage to the House of Commons. And outside, there was a huge demonstration against the expansion of Stansted. Inside, Jackie Smith was effectively standing down on the 42 days. It did remind you the big international financial crisis blows over, which at some point you imagine it will, what kind of domestic prime minister is Gordon Brown going to make? Is he going to reform himself and start focusing on issues that people actually care about? Or is he going to keep on trying to do these things where he effectively launches policies which are no more than ploys to attack the Tories?
It's sort of tactical manoeuvring, isn't it?
It's the worst of Gordon. It really is. Yeah.
And has he learnt the lesson? Because that was sort of what got him into trouble in the first place.
Well, I think at the moment we are seeing good Gordon. The question is, will we see any more of bad Gordon? I don't know. But I think it's a fascinating political question.
Ian, can I just turn to you? Yes? What did you want to say?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, it's an extraordinary situation where you have an international financial meltdown and Brown is the only person in the world who would like it to continue, in fact, because he's passport to political resurrection. And I think tactically you can actually see that happening right now. I mean, with all the stuff that he's bringing to these European summits, and these summits that he wants in America in December with a new American president and so on and so forth, it's absolutely clear that he is genuinely engaged by this, and it is serious, and he is totally up for leading and setting that agenda. But at the same time, it's entirely in his political self-interest that long may it continue. Otherwise, it's back to the humdrum of the kind of domestic prime ministership that Aditya's talking about, where the prime minister does not shine.
Jackie, you've watched Gordon Brown over the years. Obviously, him presenting whatever it was, a 20-page document on the future of world financial stability, he's good at that. But presumably, we'll have to have a normal prime minister
at some
point.
Yeah, he's clearly very much back in his comfort zone. He's the Chancellor. And the reason people in Europe are listening to him is they know he has 10 years' experience as Chancellor, and he was a very good one. They're less convinced about him as a prime minister. So I think that's... I was just thinking about this whole idea of, you know, the connecting with voters. He has one danger point here. Gordon Brown is smiling a lot, and I don't think he's smiling just because his political fortunes are being turned around about this. He is genuinely concerned about the impact it's having on people. He's smiling because he loves to talk about the sort of things... LIBOR, you said it earlier. I wouldn't have been able to say what it stood for. He loves
I've
to talk
forgotten.
The jar. He really likes this. This is where he's happiest. The trouble is, what's the voter going to make of a man who's saying, we have to save the world and I can tell you how to do it, but has a big grin over his face while he's doing it?
That's interesting, Aditya, isn't it? That point that Jackie made. Do you think Gordon Brown needs to be careful about his grin?
I certainly think Gordon Brown's enjoying his new job of Chancellor Exchequer to the entire world. I just wonder what he'll be like when he goes back to his day job as Prime Minister.
Because it was an interesting case, wasn't there, when Tony Blair finally agreed to give the date when he would stand down. Gordon Brown had a rather tense meeting with him and then came out of Downing Street. Do you remember that? Was about 2 years ago with that extraordinary self-satisfied grin, which didn't really do him any favours at all.
Given that he is such difficulty at any other time at smiling, apart from points when either Tony Blair is standing down or there's a world financial crisis, you do wonder what he does for lighter moments.
Well, we're all grinning here, and Jackie's actually still got the giggles after Joe the plumber. But on that note, we're going to wrap it up and say thank you to all my guests: the communications director of the European Policy Centre, Jackie Davis; the Guardian's Europe editor, Ian Traynor; and over in London, the Guardian leader writer, Aditya Chakraborty. Politics Weekly was produced by Tom Wolfenden. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again next week. Till then, goodbye.